Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
It's not just something you made. It's the privilege that you get to work with your hands. It's building something that serves a purpose. Proof that you have the grit to keep going. At Timberland, we understand you take your craft seriously, and we do too, which is why our products are built to the highest quality. We put in the work so you can perfect yours, with purpose in every detail and crafted with intention. Timberland, built on craft. Visit Timberland.com to shop.
The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. You can't get just one. Okay, so that's not like some marketing hyperbole. You literally can't get just one. They come in twos. So like, if you want just one, you're going to need to find a friend who loves slow-roasted chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch sauce. Or a friend of a friend, or have an awkward conversation with a complete stranger to see if they're obsessed with chicken, bacon, and avocado ranch. Or you could just like eat them both because you're obsessed with slow-roasted chicken, bacon. Okay, you get the idea. The new Chicken Bacon Ranch Street Chalupa is a Taco Bell. Participating Taco Bell U.S. locations for limited time while supplies last.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it three times on the way back to the hotel because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the No Low Ballers podcast. I'm Logan Medish of High Caliber History, your host. Very special grouping of episodes that we're doing here. I'm sitting around the table. Of course, we've got Alan from Gun Broker. We've got Dan from Go Wild. And we have Cody from Walther because we are in Fort Smith, Arkansas at the Walther factory. It's very exciting to have everybody to take the show on the road. This is our first time we're doing it. And so, Cody, thank you for having us here to sit in at the Walther factory and check everything out. We appreciate you inviting us in.
You know, I'm glad y'all came out, man. We're proud to show off this place, and we love our little piece of dirt out here in Fort Smith, Arkansas. You know,
couldn't think of a cooler place to come for the first road show. I mean, Walther is an iconic brand with some of the coolest guns out there. So
absolutely, and there's just so much company history that you guys have. I mean, let's take it all the way back. I mean, where does Walther come from?
Yeah, when you look at Germany, right? We know Walther is a German company through and through, and at its heart, you know. But you know, when you look back at what like the history of Walther with Carl Walther and his son Fritz is really the driving force of Walther in the semi-automatic category back in the day. You look at the original Walther Model 1, right? And that's what really kicked it off. Was you saw this big craze going on in the U.S. with Browning and things of making semi-auto firearms. And, you know, his son Fritz really wanted to get out there and make their version of a semi-auto, and you know, they were able to patent and push forward the fixed barrel semi-automatic gun. And that really is what kicked off Walther. And it was a great gun. It's a little pocket gun. When you ever see them, they're very small. They're made to be just kind of thrown in the pocket and shot, and you can still see them out there. And you saw a bunch of iterations with that, all the way up. One of my favorites is Model 7. So really cool calibers, you know, down in 25 ACP and then 32 a little later and stuff like that. So that was really the driving force of, you know, Walther. You know, the history of Walther's crazy, right? We'll start off semi-auto pistols, and that's what they do great at. That's what we do great today too.
Yep.
But you know, rifles and competition air guns, and I mean, we have a lot of things to talk about.
I believe we even had a shotgun in the catalog at some point.
Yeah, yes. And that's Alan and I. We were talking doing show prep. We're like, what kind of cool stuff do we want to talk about? And I brought up the shotgun, and it's perfect time because you mentioned Browning and all that stuff. And of course, you know, that was the impetus for the shotgun, you know, with his A5 and the shotgun that Walther was making for a while, was trying to mimic that A5, you know, as much as they could without stepping on the toes too much, you know.
It's a funny history. I always walk through our museum over in Germany, and we got a couple over there, and every time I walk through there, I find something else. I'm like, man, we did that, you know. You know, it's always cool. You know, it's fun to bring people over there and just kind of see that history, because you think nowadays and you think PPK, right? But it's just there's so many things about Walther. It's just a cool storied legacy.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, because by the time you get the PPK, you know, in the first quarter of the 20th century, I mean, there's 100 years of company history that has already gone on before you get to what we think of as the iconic Walther stuff today, right?
Yes.
And so how big of an operation do they have in Germany versus over here, and when did things come over here?
Yeah, so we'll kind of start off. So, you know, the original plant, correct me if I'm wrong, Melazalis, I believe it is, in Germany, which, you know, exists no more. There's still remnants of that place. Mm-hmm. You know, they packed up, they moved to Ulm, Germany, and that's where our kind of main Walther facility is at. So
largely because it's so much easier to spell.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. So three letters, you know, good for us Americans over here. We can say it real easy.
Right.
even with my long drawl, you know. But yeah, so we have our plant in Ulm, which is outside, you know, it's a 2-hour train ride from Munich, you know. So Southern Bavarian region, great culture down there, gun building culture and stuff. So that's our main plant. We have another plant as well in Arnsberg, Germany. So that's now kind of where our headquarters are at too. So, we do a lot of, the rimfire things up there and, PD380, things like that. So we had two plants in Germany, and, you're probably looking, you know, a few hundred, you know, employees over there, combined at that point. But I believe in 2012, we got our U.S. facilities. 2016 is kind of really when we moved into this and started moving forward really, really heavily. So now we have our Fort Smith plant. We have probably 150, 160 workers here now, and it's growing like crazy. So
I was going to say, it seems like there's a constant state of evolution going on the floor. It's like, well, this wasn't here last time we visited, and next time that's going to be different. And
yeah, it's all the behind the scenes stuff people never pay attention to. You know, you're just waiting for that new gun to come out, right? And, yeah, it's a lot of work in the process, and there are a lot of moving parts on the back end.
But yeah, for sure. Yeah, and that's like you said, that's what a lot of people don't understand, is just how much R&D and everything that goes into these guns before you see what hits the shelves. And then, of course, there's stuff that goes through R&D and never makes it out of that, you know. Yeah. And so there's so much behind the scenes.
It's funny with Walther's legacy too, when you talk about the development, you look at the WA-2000.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's like one of our most, you know, we get requested that a lot. They go for the last one go for like 70,000 or something like that. You know, like we were tracking that pretty closely.
So when did that gun go out of production, roughly?
Oh man, you know, I'm not too sure on that one.
Mid-90s, maybe?
87?
Okay. So
I look real smart.
Yeah.
I knew that. Yeah. I didn't read anyone's lips off camera.
So a gun that finished its production run in the late 80s still looks more technically advanced today than the competitors that are out there. Because it's just a cool-looking gun.
Yeah. It is a very cool-looking gun. A very cool-looking gun. And, I mean, I'm sure we probably all know the answer to this, but why not make something like that today with the demand, and of course, you know, with the impact that the video games have had and stuff to bring so much popularity to that, Why not?
Yeah, I think it's probably for the same reason they stopped it back then. It was a crazy hard to make, right? Could never get it to run right either. You know? So, yeah, I mean, really cool gun. And we always talk about this as like a lot of those cool guns, you know, like, yeah, we can. We always joke around. We could sell tens of hundreds of them.
You know, it's the, old, it's the 41 Magnum story. If you made this in 41 Magnum, me and my two friends would buy it.
Yeah, and I really do. I think the W2 that would be great in a modernized platform. You know, but it gets hard for companies with a storied legacy because, you know, no one wants to see their greatest hits album get remade into a pop culture thing. You know, right?
True.
And so if you go in there and add modern machining techniques and, you know, ways to make that thing easier to be manufactured on the floor, and it, then it kind of stops becoming what made it cool. It's like in the first place,
like people who put buttstocks and Picatinny rails on lever guns. Dan,
very very handy.
I'll give a shout out to Ranger Point, man. They're cool, right?
Yeah. You know what? I love them too. I just I had an opportunity to take a shot at Dan, and you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
That's right. And with Dan, we hit 100 on all of them. You know, so yeah. Poor Dan.
Oh man, I'll stand behind my tactical guns.
There you go. But so you know, obviously we've mentioned a little bit about the PPK, and obviously that's the elephant in the room for the company, right? Yeah. And it's not that we're not going to talk about the PPK. You know, for those of you who've seen the previous episodes of the show, you know that we have talked PPK before,
and we will again.
And we will again. Stay tuned. You know, but that's not kind of what we're going to focus on here with these episodes. You know, we will definitely give PPK some more love, you know, but there are plenty of other firearms that are equally interesting in the history of the company, and you know, so we're talking, you know, the P1, the P38 and stuff like that, and there's a whole different kind of interesting and amazing history with those guns. And so can you talk to us a little bit about like the legacy of the P38 and what that has meant to the company?
Yeah, I think when you look at, you know, people talk about the PPK being like one of the most famous guns for Walther. And every time I talk to, you know, history buffs and things like that, it's P38 for them. Mm-hmm. Or it really is, you know. I mean, you think of the amount of guns that were produced. And it was a really cool gun, but, you know, I think Walther made a lot of technological advances in manufacturing to be able to really crank those things out in a crazy time.
Yeah.
You know, and it led to, you look at a lot of the competitor firearms now that kind of use that, still use that system today. Mm-hmm. They're still great shooting firearms. That modern advancement of that has really kind of catapulted our industry into even some U.S. military style firearms as well. You know,
sure. So
it was a really cool gun when you take a look back at it. And you know, that's another gun that we've always looked at, one of our kind of vintage history type things, is like, man, what would it take nowadays to make that? And
right,
man, just manufacturing is so different nowadays. It is
it's like wild. We were talking about on the factory floor earlier, you know, these days guns are designed with the manufacturing process in mind as a consideration. It's like, yeah, that's a really cool feature, but man, we can't do that in a realistic way in a production setting.
Yeah.
Where then it was, okay, we need to make a functioning, you know, firearm, we'll figure out how to build them later.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, the P38 is iconic. You know, as you said, you can see the influences, yes, in the manufacturing side, but just in the gun itself, where other companies have taken little bits and pieces. Maybe it's just me. I can't look at a Beretta 92 without seeing that big open top slide and not think P38.
Sure. Well, and also, you know, when someone says Walther, what comes to my mind is the P38. You know, like when you're talking Walther handguns, and so, you know, if when someone has a PPK in mind and that's what they're talking about, they don't say, oh, you know, the Walther hand, the Walther, right? No, they say the PPK, you know, whereas we say the Walther, they're talking the P38, you know, and we all know, like, when someone just says, you know, the Walther, they're talking the P38.
Well,
you
they're almost, you know, permanently linked. It's always the Walther P38. Walther
B38. Right. Well, that's one word, right? Mm-hmm. It all just runs together there, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, always deal, you know, we get people to ask, like, do you make the Luger? You know? We made the one that you can actually make, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, and there's, you know, actually a much longer history with the P38 than people tend to think. I mean, you know, obviously it's got the iconic World War II history in it, but, you know, that gun was made into the 60s and beyond, and that's something that I think people don't think a whole lot about. We've started to see a little bit more of it because those aluminum frame guns from the 60s are now starting to get imported more on the surplus market, and just even within the last couple of months, they've become much more readily available, and of course they're a heck of a lot cheaper than a wartime, you know, P-38. And so I think that's helping to bring some of the awareness of the history that that model actually spans a much larger period of time than people tend to think of.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when you look at the technology, when you go into, like I said, like, P-1, P-88s and stuff like that, there's a lot of that technology that kind of transformed into those guns into the future, you know, and still one of my favorite guns when we walked to that museum, there's a P-88 comped version.
In there. Oh, wow.
And I was like, man, they were doing comps back then, you know.
As you said, everything old is new again.
That's right.
Yep. Exactly.
That was one of our very first episodes, wasn't it?
So but you know, the like the whole history and all those guns is pretty cool to kind of go back and see. And it's hard for even a person like me, you know, we're so focused on what's going on now and what we got. You know, my head's always 35 years in the future.
Sure.
What's coming for Walther, and it's to learn the storied history of that, you know, you could dang near get a degree in it.
Right.
Well, you know, as we were talking earlier, Walther has done, I think, a fantastic job of balancing that history and legacy with cutting-edge technology. You know, you've been able to embrace kind of both sides of that timeline, I think, better than anyone else in our space.
Yeah. And, I don't know if that's purpose or not, honestly, coming from the marketing guy. You know, I think, our fans and people that buy our guns help drive us in that direction.
Sure.
You know, because we're going to make what people buy in the end of it, you know, and there's a mix of that. We've always had, you look at the P-38 and the PBK and all that stuff, and I always say those were duty guns. Mm-hmm. We have a term for it nowadays, but back then it really wasn't like that.
Right.
Like,
right.
Those were hardcore duty guns, you know, and Walther made their living on that. And, you know, so to see us kind of back in that law enforcement scene and stuff like that nowadays is still a tribute to our heritage and what we've kind of produced ever since the beginning, all the way back to the Model 1 with it being kind of more of an agent's gun that they could throw in a pocket, you know.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and that is neat because there are people, you know, who aren't into the historic aspect of firearms who look at that and go, oh, that's interesting. Walther's getting into the law enforcement side of things. It's like, no, Walther's been in the law enforcement side of things for a long time, you know? Yeah. And it's kind of interesting to see everything old is new again, right? It all comes back around and keeps coming to that. You know?
Good things tend not to go away.
Yes.
When something is good, it sticks around, it comes back. You know, even if it goes out of vogue and fashion, it still typically comes back because it's a good product.
Sure, exactly. Well, and we've got to talk the P99 as well, right?
When you were talking about old things going new again, I wanted to say, I was like, man, please let the Paddle magazine release become cool. You know?
Yes.
We just can't make it cool, man. Love it, but man, Americans just don't like it, you know?
Yeah, we really don't. We're a stubborn breed,
I know, It's so much faster. Yeah.
Always well, like the WMP, you give both options.
Yeah,
so I like that because I'm with you. I'm a Paddle fan as well. So having both options on that pistol, I thought was a really smart move.
Yeah, that was cool. No. But yeah, the P99's a good friend of mine was Peter Dahlheimer, who was very young in that project, was one of the engineers on that development of the P99, the very beginning. He was, I don't know, 20 or 21 years old or something like that, you know. He actually has written textbooks on firearm manufacturing that you can buy. Like, he's a smart guy. But I used to talk to him all the time about the P99, and that was such a cool kind of phase for Walther to transition into, because you look at what, you know, the competitors like Glock was doing and stuff, and I think everybody saw the transition, like it was coming, you know, and Walther was just purchased by Umarex, Wolf Flaumer, in the PW group, who's an amazing man. If you ever get to meet him, he is absolutely hilarious and have a funny ruining of a James Bond movie from him later on, but he purchased the company there and immediately recognized like Walther needed to update and get into this polymer gun market and not just copy but innovate, you know. And the P99 was so far ahead of its time.
Completely.
I mean, still to this day, like I try to talk through even like the AS, the anti-stress trigger system and stuff, and it's honestly, it's almost like too much for your average guy to like take in. Like, everything that it can do and do very great, you know. And so, but it really pushed Walther, you know, it, I don't think it got its due diligence in the United States for as a duty gun, but the rest of the world sure bought into it, you know.
What I always appreciate about the P99 is, you know, we know when you say Walther, people typically think of barrels because you make some of the finest barrels out there. With the P99, ergonomics started coming into play too. And from the P99 on, every Walther handgun has just felt so good in the hand.
Yep.
And that was something that you really weren't getting in the early polymer guns.
Yeah.
You know, the Glock was not really ergonomically designed for anybody. The Sigma certainly wasn't. You know, a lot of those pieces weren't. Where the P99 felt like somebody put a lot of thought into how the human hand is shaped and what we need to do to hold that. And every P-series gun since that has really... I think shown that or excelled in the ergonomics area.
And there's actually a cool gun. It was actually up on Grimbroker. It might still be there now. It's called a P99 La Chase edition. And I think I just saw
that pop on a recently sold
list. It was super cool. And it was, you know, the P99 had, you know, the first gun to be interchangeable back straps on a polymer frame gun, but they actually did like a hand carved wood back strap on it on a OD green frame and nice engraved. Beautiful gun, you know, and it kind of got back. I thought that was one of the first really cool additions of trying to make, you know, a polymer frame gun high end and premium.
Right.
You know, because, you know, you think of the Tupperware guns, right? And like, they were just hard use duty guns. They weren't pretty. They were just, you know, go to work.
It was a tool.
Yeah. You know, then you look at your nice revolvers and 1911s and stuff like that. That was always the ornate style, you know, design work and stuff. But you saw that kind of transition into the polymer frame guns. Was like a polymer frame gun can look really nice.
Yeah.
You know, and we still try to play that today, you know, like there's no reason why it can't be. So,
yeah. Well, and the P99 is in kind of an interesting timeline and time frame space right now, right? Mm-hmm. So talk to us a little bit about what's going on with the P99.
So it's in its final edition phase right now, you know, and I bought one pretty instantly. it's at my house. It was a really cool project, but yeah, it's been around for a while, and this year is that, you know, we're going to stop manufacturing that. And I say that like it's hard for me. Like you want to keep just making these things because they're cool and they've got legacy behind them and stuff. But yeah, we just kind of made that decision. Like it was its time, you know? And so we did a cool, you know, limited edition case and challenge coin with it. And then we went back and did the original OD green, frame, like on the old P99, but did the anti-stress trigger, new tenifer coating, did it really nice and engraved final edition on it. So kind of one of those bittersweet things, you know. We know it's kind of been the building blocks for Walther for a long time, was that platform. But, you know, so I mean, it'll be its one run, you know. So we're excited but kind of, you know, sad at the same time.
How many are in that final edition?
You'll see probably a few thousand of those out of the market. Yeah. So, and they seem to be selling pretty quick, you know.
Right.
Taking a look here in the last, looks like about the last month, had a couple of final edition runs go off. 9mm and one with just 50 rounds fired, supposedly. For, you can still get them for a decent price. They're around $1,000 going right now.
Yeah. So that, they'll make their runs. Are kind of still putting them out in small batches and doing the last bit of our parts and stuff like that we have on them to kind of phase them out, you know. And we've got quite a bit of orders from dealers and stuff on them, so we wanted to kind of make sure we you know, filled the need for it. We didn't want to come out and do a final edition and make 20 and you know, like old drop culture, you know. Cool, but so frustrating at the same time, you know.
Like, it's a $5,000 gun and there's only 20 of them, and only 20 of you are going to get them.
It sells out in 2 seconds. Like, you know, it's not really what we want. It was always a people's gun, you know, and like that's not what we really wanted to do with it. We want to make sure we get them out there and have it's just the final run of them, you know. And too, like, as a Walther fan, I always wanted the green frame, you know, as a throwback. But I liked the new updated frame style that they did, you know, with the slide serrations as well. So if you look at like the old original P99, very fine slide serrations on it, you know. And so we kind of, you know, upped the quality on all the finishes and, you know, modern stuff. So
Well, and you know, and you said, you know, it's just it's time, right? And but, you know, from a manufacturing standpoint and a marketing standpoint, so how does a company determine when it's time.
You're always watching numbers, right? And you know, when that gun's not your flagship anymore, and you look, we're not investing a lot of marketing into it anymore, and we knew like the PDP is a, you know, it's built off, you know, the legacy of what we've learned off P99, but that's our gun that we're going to law enforcement with. That's the gun we're pushing and promoting and things like that. And it's a different trigger system and all that stuff. But yeah, you just kind of watch numbers and see where the industry is starting to trend towards, you know, and there's only so long you can just, you know, if you're only making, you know, a few thousand a year or so, man, it's just eating up machines that you could be building your new product with, right? You know,
and it's always better to retire when you still have some game left in you instead of being right. You know, sad, limping player going down the court who's just there because they refuse to give up.
Right. And everybody always tell you, like, they're always like, man, you know, guns are on like 5-year product cycles, you know, before they start. And I was like, you're looking at the P99, like, what? It's been around a little while, you know.
So. Right.
I do want to jump back in time, though, to the 70s, though, because Walther has made, for me, one of the most beautiful, cool firearms ever. And again, I'm gonna be that consumer saying, if you made one, I know like five of us who'd buy one.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Alan will just buy five.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, we know the pistol caliber carbine, or the, you know, sub non-machine gun category kind of took off a few years ago. And, you know, as the MPX came out and you started to see some MP5 clones come out, and I kept waiting for, you know, Walther's version. The MPL, the MPW. I'm like, gotta have one. So, am I gonna be happy?
Man, you know,
SHOT Show 2024.
Do I ever have a chance? What I'm asking, is there a chance?
Yeah, it's man. I was a Walther fanboy before I ever started to work here. Carried a PPK, shot a PPQ 5-inch competitively, and like then got hired here. You know, so. Yes, I have been, you know, I want an MPL. That was the first full auto gun I ever shot, was an MPL. It was freaking cool, you know. But, yeah, you know, I think the pistol brace thing kind of fell in and really kicked to that PCC, you know, market. You know,
did throw a big old bucket of cold water on it.
Yeah, you know, so... You know, I think we do want to grow and expand and you know, get a little bit more diverse as a company.
Sure.
You know, not sure which, you know, direction that's going to be first, you know, but yeah, I would definitely hope to see something. I can tell you the guys in the office here are definitely pushing and asking, you know, but you know, it always gets down to business as well. And I always laugh, like the industry, like you had people that stayed in their lanes, right? For the most part, like this company was really good at making this and they kind of stuck to that. And this company was really good at that and they kind of stuck to that. And they would dabble outside that, but they kind of stayed in it. Nowadays, it's just, man, it's dog eat dog.
It's free for all.
Yep. It is. Everybody's in every market. Everybody's in rifles, shotguns, pistols, you know, rimfire, everything, you know. And so, you know, we got to make sure as a company we stay true to our brand as well. And we're not just, you know, we make a cool thing. And like I said, we sell it 5,000 the first, you know, people that love Walther, but then it just dies after that and does nothing. And we wasted a lot of time, and we don't want to look to the past too much, right? We still want to be innovators in the game. And I always tell people that they're begging for a micro compact from us. I'm like, trust me, man. I know, you know, like me personally, I want one too, but like, we've always taken the stance of like, it, you know, sometimes we're not always first, but Walther, we're going to dang sure make sure it's the best when we do come out with it. And I guarantee you that. So, you know, that's the approach we kind of take on everything. And so, we do have a new product coming out, and the launch video has a little teaser of an MP in there, you know, gotcha. An old school one, you know, we're trying to, behind the scenes of the scenes, you know,
there you go.
We're trying to do it. So, yeah, I mean, we're gun guys here too. We'd love to shoot, but yeah, I mean, at the end of the day too, we got to make sure we make the right business decisions as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Alan, anything really cool that has closed recently?
Well, you know, Cody brought up the LeChase models of the P99. Seems like an appropriate conversation. And we have had a couple close recently. Both we had a 9 and a 40. And they're really cool guns. They're good collectible, you know, status to them. They're still pretty affordable. The 9mm went off with a target, test target, factory case, paperwork for about $2,400.
Okay.
The 40, which as we know right now is a little bit of out of vogue, came with the original case and a few other items, just under like $1,900. So,
okay.
So you can get into a LeChase at a fairly affordable price for what you're getting for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really cool gun. I actually had texted that link around And I was like, man, I was trying to. I was just about to go on a hunt. I was like, oh, man, I better not.
Well, there were 27 bids from a dozen different people. So yeah. Okay. There was some pretty stout competition.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. Yeah, and you still see popular, even the P99C, you know, like I'll set alerts for that. The 9mm, you know, P99C. And that was a really cool gun. I mean, you think you get that AS trigger system, decocker and all that in a subcompact before. Oh, that was cool.
Yeah.
And here you are. So, but they're tough to find as well. So,
yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Well, Cody, we appreciate you sitting around with us. The time flies when we're having fun. Yeah. And so we are just about out of time for this episode, but we're definitely coming back with you. So appreciate all of you for tuning in to this episode of the No Low Ballers podcast. Make sure you're subscribed. You're downloading the episodes on your favorite platform. You can find us everywhere. Leave us some comments, reviews. Means a lot to us. We definitely try to interact with you guys. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and we will see you next week on the next episode of the No Low Ballers podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.